sound. Logic podcast.
Two guys with no credentials.
Reviewing Rolling Stone
500. Greatest album.
Welcome to the Sound Logic Podcast. We're glad you're here with us. We are back with another review. This is one we've already had before, but we're revisiting it. At number 86, we've got the self-titled album by The Doors.
And I might get something thrown at me because my better half's in the same room, but The Doors also on the list of bands my wife does not prefer. I think
we get
that
into
list.
That in our review. It's been a while since I listened to it
before. But the doors is there. The Doors is there.
Which is fine.
There's the door. Yeah. That's going to happen. Yeah.
I need to replay this for my son who thought it sounded like Halloween music.
Halloween music
as
when we did
a 4-year-old,
it.
Yeah. Old, so he's now yeah. 6 and maybe his ideas of Halloween music have changed. We'll see. I'll have to play it for him.
Or his ideas of The Doors have changed.
That's true, yeah. Maybe he's a big fan now.
He's a huge fan of The Doors. to be fair, it does sound like carnival music a little bit.
It's got, yeah, like that driving kind of creaky organ.
Yeah. That's in there.
That Whiskey Bar song. And even the Crystal Ship, there's like a... almost haunting sound to some of their songs on this one.
And just talking about these, I actually have listened to this a while, but talking about these titles reminded me how much I really do like this album.
Really?
I like the sound.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Is it in your top 10 for a brief moment?
It might have been. You'll hear when we talk about this, and it was a while ago, probably about 3 years ago, but the opening track... I said it's a perfect introduction on a debut because everybody comes in one at a time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, organ, bass, drums, vocal, and everybody gets like this really nice, clear introduction of who they are. Yeah. And then we just get into this amazing, new sound. I guess it wasn't totally new because it was coming out, but I think they were at the forefront of that San Francisco sound. Yeah. Really cool to talk about these guys, and then we talked about Love, which...
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. I think Forever Changes
by Love.
Well,
that one's fallen off, too, I guess.
I think it's dropped way down. It might have even exited the list, but
It's there, because I saw it in my coffee table book as I was browsing the other day. Yeah.
Compared to that and some other things, perhaps from that era, this is much more polished.
Well, so it's fallen, similar to last week's album, which went from 23 to 85 for John Lennon's Plastic Ono Band. This one had been at number 42, and it was there in 2003. It was there for the coffee table book and there for the 2012 list, but then fell 44 spots to number 86 here. Is that a surprise to you as a fan? I think I remember thinking it was maybe a bit high for me. Oh. Acknowledging, though, how pivotal The Doors were and, admitting that it could be that high, but now it's down a little further. I'm curious if you have any thoughts about that.
Well, we saw a lot of these 60s iconic bands, all being very equally represented on the previous iterations of this list. And there were times when you and I both kind of scratched our heads going... So why exactly is it this high? And there seemed to be just that was kind of the grouping of bands and groups and artists that someone said, these all have to be here. And we're seeing a big shift, with a massive influx of R&B and hip hop music, music by women, etc. Coming into the top 100. We're seeing a lot of those that... And I don't think coincidentally that you and I were saying, we're not sure why this is so high. We then saw some of those ones that we critiqued dropping down. Some of the ones that we said, I'm not saying that we were right about everything, but there was a lot that we said, this is really good. And those stayed. The ones we were like, this almost seems like an editorial thing or if not an editorial, the grouping of people, which was, journalists and producers, primarily white middle-aged men in 2003. Not all, but a lot. All kind of coming from the same background and picking the same sort of things. And now we're seeing a more diverse group of people who were polled. The results are more diverse, which I certainly appreciate. And so I'm not super surprised that this is down. I still think it's a really important band and a really important album coming from a really important music scene in San Francisco in 1967. So I still think it's very significant. I still think, you know, you hear this music around, you know, certainly on rock radio, but in pop culture, you still hear a lot of this. So I still think it's important. I don't mind it here. There's a little bit of it that might sound a little tired, but I think this is more appropriate, at least not maybe not for the last list, but certainly for this list is more appropriate.
Well, I remember getting to the end of our review and feeling like I maybe need to give it a second chance because of your passion for it.
I think I pumped it up quite a lot.
And I don't think I have. So this is a good opportunity to spend some time with it again and to see if my thoughts have changed.
I think I talked about this too. I'm impressed by these, especially back before technology was great. These really good debut albums, like these incredible debut albums, you know, that you can, I know it's not as if bands, you know, record a debut album with a label and it's probably not their first recording or their first thing they've ever done. But in some cases it is, you know, like Led Zeppelin, you know, John Paul Jones and Jimmy Page were accomplished musicians and performers, but the other two weren't. They were totally green. John Bonham and Robert Plant, like they had barely done anything. They're very talented, but had no experience. So for them to walk into the studio and, you know, release a debut like the Zeppelin debut is incredible. Same here, you know, these guys have been jamming in the area for a long time, but to crank out a debut like this is just, it's pretty tremendous. So I still really like it, but I'm not upset that it's dropped down. I think it's appropriate.
That's fair. Well, what do we got coming up next time?
Coming up next time, and listener discretion, if you have little ones and you're not okay with sensitive words, this is a Miles Davis album from 1970. I'm giving you time to pause here, called Bitches Brew, a very iconic album from, I don't know what era you call this, Miles Davis, his electronic era or experimental era, or there's people probably screaming who know his career a lot better than I do, but it is, if you've listened to our review of Kind of Blue, his album from 1959, you go 11 years in the future and you get something very, very different. So
very different.
we're excited to have a guest joining us next week to bring another perspective into it. And we really hope you'll join us for that. But before that, we hope that you stick around, listen to our review of The Doors, which is coming up right after this.
Show me the way to the next whiskey bar.
Next whiskey bar.
No credentials.
Rolling Stone 500
Greatest Album.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to the Sound Logic Podcast. We sure are glad that you're here. Today we're discussing album number 42, which is The Doors, coincidentally, by the band The Doors.
It's always funny when you have self-titled albums because you have to say, you know, The Doors by The Doors, even though that sounds silly.
That's right.
What should we say? Because this is probably going to happen a bunch. Today we are talking about the self-titled album by The Doors, but that sounds so institutional. I don't know.
And like we're not actually acknowledging that they've titled this album The Doors.
Exactly. Is it just a cop-out decision by a band? Like,
that's a great.
Well,
question.
We didn't want to give it a name. Like, what? How come some? Because a lot of times a debut album will be self-titled, but then sometimes it's not. Like the Beatles, which is commonly called the White Album, that was like their 8th album.
Yeah. Right.
Fellas, for this one, we're not going to give it the title. You know, right, something like, yeah, like, oh, wow, yeah, really?
Sometimes maybe it's just laziness, or, you know, sometimes they're at that pinnacle of...
I don't know, man.
It doesn't really matter what we call this. People are going to buy it.
Or there's just not a title that fits.
Yeah. So far on our journey, we've had the album you already referenced, the Beatles' White Album, which is actually self-titled. What else have we got so far? Zeppelin 1, I guess. Led Zeppelin.
Oh, it's got to be more than that. Hold on. Give me a sec.
We've got a title that includes the band's name when we had the Who's Next, but that's not really the same thing. The Ramones.
The Ramones. The Velvet Underground and Nico is like pretty darn close. Right.
Pretty darn close.
It's just the name of the band and a person who sang with them, so that's pretty much self-titled.
Yes.
And then you have one called John Lennon Plastic Ono Band.
Right.
It's just the people who did it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, coming around to the doors here, is this an album that was familiar to you before we began?
Yes, I have this album, I think. Have you ever called into a radio station to win a prize?
Baseball talk radio, but no, never to a music station. That's not true. I used to call into The Freak back in the day, but I was also a guest host on our local college radio station too. So that was a little different.
Well, they do. I mean, we listen to Q107 in Toronto, and even to this day, they do probably 2 or 3 different call-in contests throughout the day. But it's rare that, you know, in the job I work and just the culture of our work, I don't really jump on the phone to call in for non-work related stuff. But sure, when I worked landscaping, we were on the road a lot, and a lot of times at lunchtime they'd do a contest and we'd be sitting in the truck. I called in one time and she hung up on me, but she told me to call back, so I got to do it the next day, and I won the little contest against someone else, and I won like a pack of CDs and some lottery tickets that Nora, my wife, was downtown working and was able to go pick them up. And I think this CD was in that pack. It was about 6 CDs, something classic rock stuff. So I've only listened to it a few times, but I do like it, and I've listened to it a whole lot in the last couple of weeks. So yes, I'm familiar with this one. What about you? Have you listened to this before?
No, this is a new one to me. Although, this is an album that this is the kind of album that I expected to show up on this list. A band I was slightly familiar with, but the album being composed of a lot of songs that I know from that band.
right.
So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like it's got a popular familiarity to it, even though I haven't actually had the experience of listening to it before.
Okay, so just want to dive into details?
Go for it, yeah.
Details, 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 details. This album was released January 4th, 1967. It was The Doors' debut album. And I'll mention again, I always find it impressive, certainly at the beginning part of this list, when there's debut albums, because it's like, you nailed it the first time. Pretty cool. And a pretty cool sound for a debut album. Mm-hmm. The writing credits are credited to The Doors, so all 4 of them, except for Alabama Song and Backdoor Man. Those are covers. This charted number 2 in the U.S. It did not chart in the U.K., and a number of their albums didn't chart in other countries until they were re-released later, like in the 90s or 2000s. And I think this did chart in the UK, but later, like in 2001 or something. So very interesting how that works, but went up to number 2. It only didn't reach number one because another album that we've already talked about was hanging out hard in the number one spot, and that was Sgt. Pepper's by the Beatles. So,
oh, wow.
If you were number two to the greatest album of all time, according to this list, that's not too shabby. So,
yeah,
hats off to you, Doors. You would have been number one if it wasn't for the Beatles.
It was a bold move to put any music out in 1967 with just
right
sort of avalanche of great music being made.
But you got to start somewhere, right?
I guess that's true.
If it's a debut album, you know, you're not expecting to hit number one in the debut. You may as well release it. And then it soared up the charts to number two. To date, sales are estimated at around 20 million copies.
Wow.
Which is impressive. One of the engineers, or the chief engineer working in the studio, I thought was interesting to note, Bruce Botnick. If that name sounds familiar, we just talked about him because he was the producer for Forever Changes by Love.
Oh, wow.
And I will note here, and I don't think we talked about this when we talked about Forever Changes, but I read it, that those two bands they worked together, they were buddies, or they were in the same scene. So, and I think that that was a challenge for the band Love to see their kind of cohorts in that scene, the Doors, kind of just rocket into stardom. And that didn't happen for them. And they kind of grew up musically, or in terms of their development as bands, to kind of side by side. So very interesting how you can see two bands who kind of start on the same point, and one sort of disappears, and one just, you know, becomes eternal in terms of fame. But as I was listening to Forever Changes, and of course it being very new, I heard a lot of those similarities. Not as much. I mean, the Doors, as we'll discuss, is very heavy with organ and piano. It's a huge part of their sound, and not as much of that in Forever Changes. There's a lot more guitar and flamenco guitar and other things. So a big kind of
big orchestration.
And I hear a lot of similarities in the style, that kind of little bit psychedelic, little bit hippie sound.
That's right.
So you can hear similarities there, but there's a tie-in on the production side with Bruce Botnick. They released two singles to promote the album. The first was Break On Through to the Other Side, and the second, Light My Fire. And there were so many requests for this song on the radio, and they kept putting it on the radio, but they were worried because it's like 7 minutes long. So eventually the studio and the radio stations or whatever decided to put out a radio edit, which basically just cuts out that massive instrumental kind of jam session in the middle. It just cuts that out, and you're left with a 3-minute track, which is a pretty sweet radio track to be, you know, without that.
Yeah, right.
I love it I love the instrumental in it because I'm kind of into that kind of stuff. But if you're not really into that, I could see that could kind of drag out. It is just kind of like a garage jam session, really. So that's kind of some notes. Any other notes on kind of the album in general there in its production, Ben?
Well, I know there's been a number of moments when, because of the drug reference in certain songs, the band sort of had to fight, you know, to be made, I guess, respectable in pop culture. They were often told to kind of clean up their act. And by clean up their act, like not say, girl, we couldn't get much higher, you know. you know, like you boys can be on this show, but please don't say higher when you're singing your song. And September 17th, 1967, the Doors gave a performance of Light My Fire on the Ed Sullivan Show. Network executives asked that the word higher not be included as they sang through the song, which just seems hilarious now. They apparently decided, at least in word, that they would go along with that plan. But because they'd never actually practiced the song without that, Jim Morrison got kind of nervous and forgot to make the change. There were future plans to have them on the show after that, and they all got axed. the producer of the show said, essentially, you're never coming back. and apparently they were fine with it. They're like, hey, we got our stuff out there. People are going to buy it now.
Yeah.
You know, we just were on the Ed Sullivan Show. And so I guess sometimes controversy like that can be a helpful part in your musical journey. But I like that story, you know, for so many reasons that, you know, it wasn't that they were trying to be sneaky necessarily and get away with something on live TV. He just basically forgot or messed up. And yet it was traumatic enough at the time for the word hire to be on broadcast television in prime time that's right. They were never allowed to come back again.
Mean, you know, they were still a very young band.
Yes.
They were still promoting their first album. They had only been a band for 2 years. And this is the show that kind of makes you famous. I can imagine you would be pretty nervous. Now, it's possible that any combination of them could have been intoxicated at the time.
Sure.
I think that was part of the culture, and that's not a criticism, just I think reality. But yeah, that is a good story. And I think that kind of paints a picture of the culture, of the music, of the group, of unfortunately the tragic story of Jim Morrison. But
yeah, do you want to say a word about that? I think that's probably important to include for those who are not all that into the Doors.
Yeah, if you're not into the Doors, a quick history on the Doors, very briefly. They formed in 65. Four guys. Ray Manzarek is the keyboard player and a founding member. And his two brothers were in a band with him. They left, and then he recruited Robbie Krieger and John Densmore. And Robbie Krieger had only been playing guitar for 6 months. And one of them also knew a vocalist and film and art student named Jim Morrison. And so he joined as well. So that was the band that final lineup formed in 1965. And then their first album came out in 67. Between 67 and 71, they released 5 more albums. So in that span of 4 years, 6 albums total.
Wow.
And Jim Morrison, of course, issues with mental illness and substance abuse, and unfortunately passed away in 71, aged only 27, to drug overdose and substance abuse. Was found there dead in his room. So, and kind of one of those performers where I think that even in the mainstream, many people were aware of his difficulties, and he was seen in public, you know, to be intoxicated, and I think spoke publicly about it and about his experiences and some of his struggles too. So I think that it's hard for me as someone who knows it, even just a little bit of that story, to listen to this music, listen to his performances, which are exceptional and are you know, very, very gripping, even just to hear him. But if you are to see footage as well, it's hard to not think about that part of the story too, and how that has influenced, you know, the music and kind of how it tragically ended too.
Yeah.
And also, you know, it's from a time when mental illness and struggles and things like that were still just not talked about. There was, I think, very little sympathy for people dealing with those issues. And today, although there's still a lot of stigma around it, there's more resources. I think there's more sympathy and empathy. And there's, I think personally, a lot more people who are struggling or who are at least vocal about it. So, I think we view it differently today.
Yeah. But it does color the way I hear it. I think you're right.
Me too. It does. It's hard for me to turn that part of my knowledge off when I listen to it.
It reminds me a little bit of Amy Winehouse's Rehab song. Like, you know, she dies then in the end. And like a real life tragedy lived out and sort of preserved forever because the song keeps playing. And
Do you ever think about listening to that song when you first heard it and listening to that song after she died, and how, like, I think about how when I first heard it, I kind of chuckled, like it was sort of funny.
Yeah.
And then listening to it again after her passing, like, it's not that funny anymore because...
Right.
Because yep. she it killed her, you know, in the end. Mm-hmm. It's awful.
I feel the same way about what I perceive it anyway. Maybe it's reading too much in it, but it sounds like some pain in Jim Morrison's voice as he's singing through some of these songs, which are often a very lament minor kind of tone too.
We'll get into the sound, but there is I hear a darkness in a lot of it. There's a darker tone in some of it, and we'll get there, but yeah, so that's, yeah, I think that that's good that you brought that up, that it's good to kind of, if you're not familiar with the Doors, there's a story there. And, this is, right. I guess in many senses, the beginning of the story. I want to talk about the album cover, which is one, again, that I was familiar with, but didn't really know exactly. Some things I know are album covers and some things I just recognize as pictures. This was one that I just knew as a picture, but didn't know that it necessarily belonged to an album because there's no album title. It just says the Doors. So it could have just been a photo. But it's very iconic and very, very dated. Like you can tell when this was from, and I'm going to describe it. I'm going to make a reference to something that's very new that kind of mimics this. So we have in very stylized letters, almost a lime green or yellow color, the Doors. I find that the O's look like, the heads of two flathead screws looking as a bird's eye view. Interesting. The doors, the is very small, just over the bulbous part of the lowercase D. And that's like bubble letters. Very 60s psychedelic. It's a black background and it's a color photo. On the right side, we have the three members, musicians, you know, Ray Manzarek, Robbie Krieger, and John Densmore, kind of looking up. You can't really see their bodies. You mostly see their faces, a bit of their clothing. And on almost the entire left side of the album is taken up by Jim Morrison's face. It's just his face. With only the right side. The rest is in shadow, and that's where the rest of the band is there.
Yeah. Yeah, they're kind of emerging from his face.
Almost overlaid. Like there's actually no, I don't think the images actually touch each other, but they're on top of what would be the left side of his face. So everything's a circle in culture. And sometimes we do things in pop culture where we reference something very old and it's like a callback and it's really funny. And I know that you've seen at least once in the theater, the new Frozen 2 movie with your kids. And in the song in the middle of that movie with the character Kristoff, when he sings Lost in the Woods, the video is very much, they've got a lot of this overlapping, like this giant face on the side and then him again on the side. And I think that song was intentionally very 80s, but there's some stylistically some things that this reminded me of that right away. Giant face, and we were just laughing out loud in the theater. My wife was guffawing over top of all the 5-year-olds there who didn't really get it.
It is dated, but I think it fits. There's a darkness to it that kind of matches the music. Like, you know, we've talked a few times about album covers that don't necessarily mesh with what's on the album, and this I think this feels appropriate to me for what the sound of the album is.
Yeah. So track listing, I'd like to go through these tracks if you don't mind.
Yeah. We're back in that sweet spot of 11
the
tracks.
The sweet spot, 11 tracks.
Late 60s, early 70s.
You know, and again, only what? Like 45 minutes kind of thing?
Yep.
Something like that. Side A, Break On Through to the Other Side. Soul Kitchen. The Crystal Ship. 20th Century Fox. Alabama Song, aka Whiskey Bar. Light My Fire, a 7-minute song to close out the side. And then side B is Backdoor Man. I Looked at You. End of the Night. Take It As It Comes. Easy, baby. Take it as it comes. Don't move too fast. And The End. The End coming in at 11 minutes and 41 seconds.
Yeesh.
Did you get through listening to all of The End, Ben?
Yeah, just because I had it on while I was doing other work or things like that.
Does the End make you uncomfortable?
Any song that goes over 5 minutes makes me uncomfortable. But
okay, I meant lyrically.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it has a darkness like the rest of the album, and
yeah,
I think it's fitting. The discomfort that I feel with it is a discomfort that lingers in the back of my head through this whole thing, and maybe crescendos at the end.
Do you have any favorites? I'm not sure where to start. I have a couple ideas, but they're kind of disjointed. I kind of jumped in there with The End because it was the last one we mentioned. But do you have any favorites or any songs that surprised you being not familiar with this album?
No, I don't know that anything really jumped out as exceptional. I guess I should play my hand now. The Doors are not a band.
Okay.
The Doors are not a band that I'm drawn to. And while I like some of the radio hits here, and I think it works really well as an album, it felt familiar. The songs that I didn't know also felt familiar too, but they felt like The Doors,
okay,
band that I'm not particularly enamored by. So it felt like a very different kind of experience, right, than some of the ones we've had of late. Albums that were completely new to me, or a bunch of songs that were completely new to me that sounded different maybe from ones that I'd heard before. This all flows really well and flows conceptually as a whole. There's some funny, quirky stuff here that was maybe a little bit unexpected. Some of the wordplay on a few of the songs, 20th Century Fox maybe in particular, is a song that, it's kind of cute the way that line gets thrown in there. And I think I'd heard Alabama Song, Whiskey Bar, but it does have kind of a different kind of vibe to it as well. I really like Light My Fire, actually. If I had to pick one that's a favorite, that's probably it. It feels weird to pick a very overplayed, probably, song as a favorite choice.
Yeah, it is played a lot.
But that's probably it. But again, like I mentioned as we were getting started here, this is what I expected to see on an album on this list. Something that
right.
just feels good, like some popularity, well-constructed, significant sounds, inspirational to others. It checks all the boxes. I guess I finish it off, though, feeling like, just not for me. And that's a different kind of feeling than when we tackled Jimi Hendrix Experience, and I felt that way, where I was like, yeah, this is what I was expecting. But I also felt like, oh, and it's amazing. This I can appreciate its brilliance and greatness, but, you know, just not quite my thing. What about you? What are the songs that stand out for you? And do you feel some similar feelings to me, or do you really get wrapped up in this music and savor it?
Yeah, in fact, I'm really upset by the way you feel about it. No, I'm joking.
No, this is where the marriage all
the contrary.
Falls apart.
in fact, I appreciate your honesty about it. And that's one thing I like about our conversations, that there's really no, you know, there's no animosity. It's kind of how we feel. The Doors are a band that I have always enjoyed, but never really studied.
Yeah.
Something that when it came on the radio, I went, oh man, I really like that. But I've never really done a dive into their music. And I think I probably will. Because as I was listening for this, I really like Riders on the Storm. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I want to listen to that. What album's that on? That's on L.A. Woman, which is their last album. So I listened to some of that, and I was like, ooh, I like some of this too. So I am going to get into them. I like the 60s sound. I like prog rock. Over the years, I've gotten into bands like, of course, we've talked about Rush. Yes, Genesis I enjoy. I need to get into more Genesis. So I'm into prog rock, and I like that sound, and I can turn on, you know, again, like a 7-minute Light My Fire jam and just kind of close my eyes, and I really enjoy that. I like that a lot of this album is very quirky. I think you said it well. There's some weird stuff. There's some almost kind of cute, clever stuff too. And there's some really dark stuff, which is difficult at times. And it's not always what I want to listen to lyrically, but I also really appreciate bands that tell it like it is. Mm-hmm. Our lives are full of every aspect of the human experience. And to ignore any one of them, I think, is to ignore who we are as people and as a society. And I would prefer to listen to this that talks about a little bit everything, even though sometimes I feel like it's more on the dark side, but there are songs that aren't negative and aren't dark, than a band that doesn't address it at all ever, or an album that is just happy sugar-coated bubblegum the whole time. It's like, well, that's nice and it feels good, but it's not realistic, and that's not our lives 24/7.
Right.
We have to acknowledge all the parts, I think, to be able to process them properly and deal with the more negative things, probably the things that we don't really enjoy, but the things that we have to deal with. And if we're able to process them and move on, we're able to enjoy the more positive parts of our lives better. So
yeah,
I'm okay with going there sometimes, and this is an album where you can go there if you need to.
Yep. I think we had similar kind of sense when we tackled Nirvana's Nevermind, like some stuff that's not always comfortable to engage there, but important that it's bringing it to the surface. So I definitely empathize with that. And again, I think I appreciate that about this. I think it is really a tonal disconnect for me, not necessarily because this isn't something that I don't understand why people like it. You know, that's been an experience sometimes along this journey too, where I'm like, really, this is great. I totally see the greatness here.
It's just not your thing.
Not my thing. Yeah.
Right.
I don't know exactly that I can put my finger on what it is. I was listening to it this week, getting ready, and our youngest, who's three, said, "Why are you playing Halloween music right now?" And I thought, oh wow, there's like something about this music sounds like what we think of as spooky in pop culture.
That organ, it must have been.
Yeah,
you must have been listening to the beginning of Whiskey Bar. It is very haunted house.
I don't think it was that. It was that one. It wasn't Whiskey Bar, because that one does have a kind of
More upbeat
sound. I think he just like hears that organ and a minor key and sort of thinks like, oh yeah, that's kind of haunted house music.
And
I don't know, maybe that's part of my disconnect or something too, that some of the sounds on this album feel, I don't know, I feel like any describing word I have is going to sound negative here in a way that I don't want it to. Dated is the wrong word. I don't know. It just not, it doesn't mesh with what I long for in music. And I feel weird saying that, but anyway.
So that's kind of how I feel about the album and the Doors sound in general. And I do like it. And I really, really enjoy listening to this. And as we've been preparing over the last few weeks, and we took a little bit of break off, so that gave me even a little more time to listen. I've been listening to some of the other upcoming albums as well, but I kept coming back to this one because it's one of the ones I just enjoyed more.
Oh, interesting.
And it's fun. It's just a lot of fun for me. I love the musicianship. So this is a cool, I want to talk about the makeup of the band a little bit, because you've got Ray Manzarek on keyboards and piano, most like a lot of keyboards, organ and other keyboards, Fender Rhodes as well. Robbie Krieger on electric guitar, usually electric guitar, John Densmore on drums, and Jim Morrison on vocals, I think only vocals. So you notice something missing in that lineup. There's no bass player. There were a couple tracks where one of them added some bass. And I don't know if they sometimes toured with a bassist, but the composition of the band doesn't have it. Ray Manzarek sometimes would play two different keyboards at the same time. And with the left hand, he would be playing one which would have maybe a heavier bass sound to it, which is really, really neat.
You kind of hear that on the very first track, Break On Through to the Other Side. I think of as having an opening bass line, but it's not an actual bass guitar making that do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. You know, that like is a recurring theme through the whole song that I think I just always assumed was a bass guitar there, but it's not. Interesting.
That same kind of drone in Light My Fire through the whole instrumental section of Light My Fire. That's just the left hand the whole time playing the bass notes. There's no there's no bass there. It's really cool. And in Whiskey Bar at the beginning, Alabama song, I had to look it up because I could swear that that was a tuba. Brum, 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 brum. But it's him on a synthesizer with that very kind of scratchy sound that sounds like a tuba, you know. It's very it's just a really neat sound. I want to talk about some of these tracks, and I wanted to mention the makeup of the band, because Break On Through to the Other Side, I think, is one of the best opening tracks to an album we have ever heard. And I'm going to explain why. I think that it does so many things well. And one of the best things it does, this is the band's first album. It introduces every member of the band all at once, one at a time. Okay, so the first two bars are John Densmore playing up. I read that he was into the bossa nova craze that was coming up from Brazil through the 60s. So he plays a bossa nova beat. So he, instead of the claves, he's using a rim shot on the snare.
Okay.
And so you get two bars of that. Then you get two bars of the organ. Then you get the guitar riff. And then you get the vocal. And then you get the vocal. So you get in eight bars, each member introduces themselves one at a time. Here's the band, and then boom, we're right in. And those are the four guys. Like, that's it, the whole album. And they each have a very signature sound. I think that Ray Manzarek is really the musical leader of the band. His performances, and I think his instrument really drives the sound of the band, at least on this album, and I think throughout most of their career, although I'm kind of speaking maybe out of turn because I haven't studied the rest of their career, but on this album, like, he's the one who takes the lead. But I love that everybody gets a moment right at the beginning, and it's not drawn out, it's short, like I said, two bars each, boom. And I love it. I love the way that they introduce themselves, and I think that it's, whether I got to assume it was intentional. It's a great track. It's a catchy track. It's short. It's 2.5 minutes long.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like a short song because it does all the things for me that I want a radio single to do. So I love Break On Through to the Other Side.
And it jumps out the gate too, I think, especially in an era where you're letting the record needle touch. You know, it's sort of, I'm imagining it leaps off that first sort of, I can, you know, for those hearing this for the first time, when they sort of push play or, you know, turn the turntable on.
Drop the needle.
It is a really, something that grabs you right out of the box in addition to that.
Oh, yeah.
Lineup kind of geniusness there.
Then we go into Soul Kitchen, which is that very, very 60s, very hippie sound to me with that high end of the kind of Hammond organ. And the bending guitar. That to me is very tropey. I mean, at the time it wouldn't be, but now it's like, okay, like this is very cheesy 60s stuff, but like it's, they're the ones who pioneered it. And I think that's almost that kind of, you know, that haunted house carnival thing we were talking about. Mm-hmm. But I just dig that so much. And I love, again, that that's kind of just the players there. Alabama song Whiskey Bar was taken from a European play from the 20s.
Whoa.
Which is really interesting. Yeah. And Backdoor Man is a cover of a song by blues artist Willie Dixon from the 40s. You know, so Backdoor Man, I think, has a few different connotations. I think it's kind of like the man on the side in this, you know, coming in through the back of the house, and certainly in the context it was written. So again, some of that, I think he touches on a few, just some different sides of relationships on this album, and some different things there. The third track, The Crystal Ship, it kind of, my eyebrows kind of raised when I heard, you know, that first lyric, before you drift into unconsciousness, I'd like to steal another kiss. And I thought, well, that sounds a little, I don't know how I feel about that. And I was listening to it, and my son was sitting across the room, and he heard Before You Drift Into Unconsciousness. He kind of looks at me with a sideways glance. I'd like to steal another kiss. He was like, what are you listening to? Like, this is inappropriate. You know, like, it's kind of funny, but yeah, it is kind of
well played.
It could be, on one hand, it could be romantic. On the other hand, it could be a little, you know, a little suggestive that it's not a healthy kind of scene there. I think depending on the setting or your frame of mind could be taken either way. I loved, again, that play on words of 20th Century Fox. I actually had to research that because I thought, wait, which came first? The film company or this song? But the company was founded like back in the 20s or 30s, right. So I love that. And you know, Fox would have been such a trendy word to call a babe back then. We talked about the end. I listened to that a bunch of times because I wanted to kind of get the feel of it. It's dark, you know. It's about the murderer. The murderer, you know, walks down the hall. Like, that's the beginning of it. It's kind of this story, and it's kind of rambling too, you know. It's very interesting. So that's some specific things on the tracks. So a good friend of ours, Chris Clements, two-time guest of the show, he's been on for some Bob Dylan albums. I roomed with Chris in college, and Chris was a big fan of the band Phish, and we were listening to The Doors once, and we were talking about The End, and he mentioned that Phish does a cover of The End, but instead of saying, Mother, I want to blank you, they've changed the lyrics there to things like, I want to borrow the car, and I want to cook you breakfast, and I want to... you know, send you flowers and all these really nice things instead of what he actually wants to do in the song. Yeah, which is pretty great. It was in like a jam medley that they did.
That's funny.
So you couldn't just search it, Phish playing The End, because they never actually had a track called that. And Phish has released like 5 bajillion live albums. Like every time they play a show, it becomes an album kind of thing. So they've done like a lot of original material and a lot of covers as well. So, well, that's me on The Doors, The Doors. I feel like I kind of stole the mic for about 20 minutes there. But I think all that to say, I enjoyed the general feel of this, and there are a lot of really specific little things that I liked as well. And I know I've said this, I love the way the band introduces themselves and really sticks to those, I'll call them musical personas throughout the album, as they really, I'm not saying they didn't evolve as a band throughout their career, but they really set the tone here as to what each musician is like and what their personality is musically. And I really like that. And I think that there are some famous piano players throughout rock and roll history, but there's only a few bands that had really well-known keyboard players, you know, that you could name by name. You know, Ray Manzarek is one that comes to mind right away. I think Richard Wright of Pink Floyd, and the organ, such a huge part of the Pink Floyd sound. Tony Banks of Genesis, again, another prog rock band. And I can't think of a whole lot of, you know, there are other bands that had organs or had keyboard players or had piano in their sound, but there wasn't all, there might have been, you know, like in Van Halen, sometimes, you know, Eddie Van Halen would play the synth. And in other bands, you might have somebody play a piano part now and then, but, you know, for the studio, for live, you just have a session musician come in that the piano player is actually part of the band. I guess Supertramp, Rick Davies, but really he's playing the piano, not as much organ. So, yeah, really, really neat to have organ, mostly organ and other sounds as the lead instrument in many of these songs. And I think that's one of the things that makes them stand out.
Yeah, I like that. You're making me think that maybe I was a bit too hard on the. No, actually, I mean, this is going to be a weird one for me to re-rank.
Okay, that's all right.
Because I actually think this is a brilliant album. It's just not one that I love, and those are the hardest ones because. You know, I don't know how to move something when it's not something I really want to be consuming myself. But again, I've said this a couple of times now. I really think it's good.
Well, I'll echo that and say that, you know, I got to hear you go absolutely gaga for Marvin Gaye's What's Going On. And I really appreciated that album. I enjoyed listening to it. But it's not one that I've gone back to. It's not one that just really grabbed me. But I know for you, it just kind of changed your life and was one that just you just absolutely fell in love with. And that's okay. You know, like we all have that. And there's different things musically that really kind of stimulate me that I go, oh, I really like that. And, you know, so if that's that certain thing, whatever it is, if it's in the music, it's going to be one that I come back to. And this is one that I really enjoyed. And I already knew I liked the Doors sound, but had never really invested. Even this album, which I have, like I said, I only listened to it a few times. I'm definitely going to listen to it a lot more.
I'll just say how appreciative I am to have some familiarity here on an album. I feel like it's been a little while since we've had an album where we've been like, oh, okay, yeah, this is stuff that I've known for a while and appreciated for a while. You know, just looking back through, you know, maybe the closest we get is Please Please Me, and that's neither of our favorite Beatles album, right? It's really all the way back to Hotel California half a dozen albums ago where we get songs that, you know, we kind of grew up with in a sense. Mm-hmm. So it was nice to have a Doors album here that I didn't know about, but had something familiar on it. And that's been good.
Cool. Now I got to pick a song. Are you going to pick Light My Fire? I know you said that was kind of your favorite.
I think so. Yeah. Unless you want it, and I can go with
another
one. No,
you take that.
I think the opening track, just the way that you've talked through that one, deserves to be here too. I'm not telling you what to pick, but if you want Light My Fire, I'll pick Break My Heart to the Other Side.
Well, I think we should go with those two, and there are so many other really neat songs in this album that I really like. I think that's the one I would pick, Break On Through. Like I said, it just smacks you in the face. And I really like Light My Fire, and I really like that there's a long instrumental, because as much as they did a lot of kind of catchy, concise songs, that was really a part of that scene as well, that musician scene. There were so many musicians at that time, and that kind of jam scene, the San Francisco scene. I like that they included that in there, because a lot of it is just kind of them just kind of noodling, just playing around. And they kept that. Yeah. I think that's the kind of thing that often gets cut. Oh, that was really good, guys. We're going to cut down to, you know, just, you know, 20 seconds of that to make it a little more consumer friendly. This is like, nah, we're leaving it all in. So yeah, perfect. Break On Through and Light My Fire. Oh, and I want to mention one more thing. It's hard for me to listen to Light My Fire without thinking of that scene in Castaway when Tom Hanks finally lights his fire and has this big bonfire on the beach and start singing in a ridiculous way.
Fire! There you go! Light it up! Come on! The turn of the dead and bro! Ouch! Ouch! Good girl! We couldn't get much higher! Come on, baby! Light my fire!
I don't know, starting to break down a bit too, but also very excited that he has fire, sings Light My Fire. They said it couldn't get any higher. You know, like it's pretty great. So thanks, Tom Hanks, for spoiling and enhancing that song at the same time.
Yeah.
I don't know how I'm going to answer this question. Is this album still relevant? Because when I listen to the sounds, yeah, the sounds to me, as much as I've said how much I really love it, the sound is, that organ sound is dated. Like, you don't hear that a whole, there are a few bands doing it a bit. I think some of the kind of, there were some, I think of bands like Wolfmother, you know, in the mid-2000s, there were some bands kind of bringing that big orchestral rock sound back a little bit with some organ.
Yeah.
Or even a band we talked about, Greta Van Fleet, the kind of Zeppelin sound alike that's been popular in the last couple of years. You might hear a bit of that. Zeppelin, another, we talked about organ players, John Paul Jones, bassist, but playing organ in a lot of tracks. In fact, in their later albums, almost exclusively. I think the songs are relevant. I think the popularity of the songs, you know, keeps them relevant. I think some of the sounds are not, and it pains me to say that, but I think just it's a sound that's kind of stuck there. But it's a sound that I think a lot of people will still like, but just not necessarily emulate in that way right now. Does that make sense? Is that fair to say?
I think so. And while we haven't gotten to this part of it yet, the album is filled with songs that are still covered today. By lots of different bands, you know, all the way up to sort of just after these songs came out. If you search for Soul Kitchen, Light My Fire, Break On Through on Spotify, you will get hundreds and hundreds of results for these songs that people feel are brilliant. And when they redo them, they still sound really good. And sometimes I would say, maybe because I don't resonate as much with the sound, they sound even better. And so I guess when I think about relevancy in terms of like the artwork that is in the composition of these songs, it is extremely relevant because there's something timeless about the song structure, the lyrics, the tone, the tempo, that even if the sort of instrumentation sounds a little bit weird to our modern ears 50 plus years later, it's still compelling and makes us want to engage with it. And for artists to re-record it in their own take. So I guess I would say dated yes, relevant yes, which has happened a few times along the way.
Yeah.
Here.
Yep.
Yeah.
This album comes in at number 42.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that position?
Well,
on
at
the
least
list?
One higher.
yep.
Phrase we haven't used too often of late, but I think I could see this as sort of a top 20 album because of how well it is composed and put together and thought through. And the thing that sort of holds me back a little bit is my own disconnect, I guess, with the sound. But it's really, really good. And so I'm actually a little bit surprised it's this far down the list. But maybe it is that the sound, the dated sound, you know, ends up not holding up as well as some of the others that come before it. But, you know, having said that, we've got some really funky stuff. You know, Velvet Underground and Love would be two that come to mind very quickly as like quirky psychedelic 60s albums that are ahead of it on the list.
Sure. Yeah.
And less popular too. so I don't know. I could nudge it up. I could see it. I guess I have some surprise that it's here and not higher.
Yeah, I could see it a little higher. I think there's some albums ahead of it that are kind of like, it's almost like the music industry or the critics saying like, oh man, this album is just so many people loved it and it was so influential. And like, oh, it's, you know, it's almost like, it's like this secret album that make like Forever Changes is like this secret album, and the Velvet Underground, like, oh man, it inspired so many bands to start out, that those are the ones that are, you know, the best. And not necessarily the ones that like sold 20 million copies and everybody knows Light My Fire. Everybody knows Break On Through. Like everybody's heard that stuff, you know, anybody over the age of 30, let's say, you've all heard that a billion times. So it is surprising. I was kind of like, oh yeah, The Doors. That's right. We haven't had The Doors yet. And it's kind of one of those bands that you expect are in the top 20 or 30. And here they are at 42. And then listening to it going, yeah, this is like, this is good. This is good. And it's memorable and it's influential and it's groundbreaking and it's successful and popular. It's got all the signs of an album. Like you said, this is an album I thought I would be hearing an album like this in the top 20 or 30. So yeah, I'd put it higher. Exactly where and what albums I would bump.
That part's getting harder at this point.
Not too sure. Yeah. But we talked about maybe some of the compilation albums and maybe some of the ones that were, you know, kind of those hidden gems that were good and influential, but maybe not as popular. Like maybe this should be up there. But if you said this was top 30, no problem. Top 20, I think that might be pushing it a little bit. But I mean, if someone can make a good argument, you know, for any of the Bob Dylan albums in the top 20, then I could make just as good an argument, I think, for The Doors to be there.
Well said.
You know, I'm not saying that those albums don't belong there, but if there are good reasons for that, then there's got to be good reasons for this to be there too. Yeah. Because also sonically, it's really, really well done. And that's all I have to say about that. It's a Tom Hanks tie-in for you. Ben, you mentioned that many bands have covered these songs. Do you have something in mind or something you've listened to?
Yeah, so it's been fun this week to realize some of the rabbit trails you can follow with some of these here. I mentioned three songs, and I'll give an example for each. Okay, so we've got Stevie Wonder in 1969, I believe, just a couple years after this comes out, does a cover of Light My Fire. It's brilliant. And like, you know, kind of scrubs all the darkness off of the Doors version. And got sort of Stevie's super upbeat pop sound, even though it's in a minor key. It's really good. Then I found a cover of Break On Through by a band called Me Without You, who were signed to Tooth and Nail Records back when we were in high school. I think
that's a familiar name.
When I initially got into them, I actually saw them perform live a couple of times. They were sort of dark punk metal at times. And one of their gimmicks, at least way back in the day, this is now 15 years ago, I guess, was that their lead singer, who didn't play an instrument, would have piles of flowers around the stage, and he would make bouquets while he was singing and then sort of tear them apart and got to, like, emotionally tense parts and throw them into the audience. It was pretty powerful as a college student to experience something like edgy like that. But they've got a cover of Break On Through on one of their more recent albums that I wasn't familiar with, but
okay,
you know, got to experience that. And then finally, an artist that we've got coming up here in a few albums, Patti Smith, has an album just of covers. In 2007, she came out with an album called 12, which is interesting because it actually has 13 covers on it. But 13 covers of a whole bunch of the bands on this list. It's got songs like Are You Experienced, Gimme Shelter, Within You, Without You, The Boy in the Bubble, and Smells Like Teen Spirit. Soul Kitchen is on there as well. So if you like Patti Smith, or if you've been starting to listen to her Horses album and haven't quite put your finger on what it is that makes her so great, hearing her do renditions of these very popular songs is really fascinating and kind of quirky and cool. Kind of interesting too. So I'd encourage everyone really to pull up your Spotify app and go check out Patti Smith's 12 album for 13 covers of
cool
songs that everybody already knows.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, those are great suggestions to listen to.
Yeah. Full disclosure, I knew about none of those before we got to this album.
Right. But
it's been a fun, I think, addition to this review process to be thinking about covers. And when I don't know, I need to go in search of some.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what we do as musicians and music fans, is we take someone else's art and we, you know, pay tribute to it by replaying it, just performing it again, or putting our own spin on it. And I like that.
Yeah,
That's cool. And I think
More than ever before, it's really easy to draw the lines and make those connections and figure that out. Music is at our
fingertips, for sure,
essentially for free.
Yes.
And you know, there's lots of different ways still to support the artist, but you sure can get into all kinds of different deep dives in a very short period of time.
So we'd like to talk about if the Doors have any other albums on this list, and they have two more albums. LA Woman comes in at 364 and Strange Days at number 409. So in another 8 years, we can talk about the Doors again. Yeah. Great. Well, thanks for diving into the Doors album with me, Ben. I know that was a new one for you, and I really enjoyed talking about it with you.
Well, and thanks for bringing some of your passion. I think hearing some of the things you had to say about it makes me want to go back and listen a couple times more. I was sort of thinking, as we were approaching this recording time, I'm glad to have listened to this. Probably not one I'll go back to, but hearing some of your enthusiasm makes me wonder if now I need to give it another chance and have another listen. You know, maybe
that's great. I'm glad that could rub off on you a bit.
In the background, anyway,
put you know, some great tracks and put on your Halloween playlist.
That's right. We've had this experience with some right of our special guests too, right? Where hearing their enthusiasm has made us both want to do that. It doesn't often happen when one of us does that, but I appreciate your words tonight and looking forward to maybe doing a bit more of a dive.
Well, thank you.
Yep.
Well, if you want to hear some more enthusiasm about an album from me, you'll want to tune in next week. Because this is a moment that we've been waiting for, or at least I have, for 42 albums. We finally discuss.
Is there another Beatles album?
No. Nope. album number 43. Finally, Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd. And oh, I got to tell you, I can't wait to talk about this album. We have a longtime friend of ours who's going to join us, and we might have some special things releasing in the next week for you. And I'm just really, really pumped to talk about the album, how much I love it, my history with it, and have a little bit of discussion as to why in the world it's way down at 43. So if you are also someone who is frustrated by this being at 43, or you have some memories, please go to our SoundLogic page on Anchor. Go to anchor.com and you can find us there, and you can leave a voice message. There's still some time to do that in the next week. Leave a voice message and we'd be happy to play your thoughts either on our review, or you know, we'll release it as a special episode, as we would like to do before it comes out. And we would love to hear what you have to say about Dark Side of the Moon.
Absolutely.
Until next time, Ben, thank you for spending some time with me. And thank you at home for joining us. And we will talk to you next time on the SoundLogic podcast.
Always a pleasure.
If you like what you hear, subscribe on your favorite podcast app and write a review.
Send us a message at our Facebook page, on Instagram, or through our SoundLogic podcast Twitter feed. Thanks for listening.
We hope you enjoyed that classic episode of ours. Tune in next time for the next album on the new 2020 Rolling Stone list.